I've been advised that I'm not to introduce the Prime Minister, just to call upon him to speak. Mr. Prime Minister.
Thank you very much, Robert. Mr. President and other members of the UTEC family, and representatives of the Museum of Modern Art, visiting presenters, ladies and gentlemen. When an architect designs a building, or when a painter goes to the canvas, for many of them, they infuse in it something that is uniquely their own. And therefore, for architects or for painters, if you look at a building or if you look at a painting, without being told, you can tell which architect designed that structure or which painter painted it, because they leave their footprint. But what they try not to do is to end up with every building they design looking identical, or every painting they do looking the same. I'm faced with a challenge this evening, because this is the third speech I'm going to be making to pretty much the same audience, or the same type of audience, on the same subject in 1 week. Yes. And therefore I'm challenged to find a way to say the same thing for the third time and make it sound new and different. And it is an enormous challenge. There are some things that make this particular occasion different, and that is the involvement of UTEC. And I wanted at the very outset to commend UTEC. It needs to be commended in so many respects, because it has, perhaps more than any other tertiary institution in Jamaica, it has broadened and expanded the range of tertiary offerings to a much greater number of Jamaicans than any other. I think it has done tremendously well. And one of the things that it has done is to introduce new disciplines that are not offered anywhere else. I remember when I was Minister of Construction, I remember work began then with help from external partners on establishing a school of architecture. And I was pleased to be advised today that not only are you offering first degrees in architecture, but you are now offering master's degree in architecture as well. You have come a long way, and how well you have come, and I want to congratulate you for that. As a matter of fact, I'm told that in terms of the mainstream professions, the only frontier that has not yet been conquered is offering degrees in dentistry. And Professor Morrison was quick to let me know that that one is now within your grasp, and that very soon we're going to have a school of dentistry within the UTEC offerings. And it is something I want to commend. But back to the question of architecture, which I assume is going to be the focus of much of the presentations and the discussion that will ensue. Yesterday, in addressing a group of planners, I pointed to some challenges that confront us now. And I'm going to allude to some of those briefly. But what is important is that in facing those challenges, we have to be equipped. And to be equipped to deal with the challenges that confront countries like Jamaica, and indeed most of the countries in the Caribbean, being well qualified as an architect is good, but not perfectly sufficient. Being qualified as a Caribbean architect is where we have to go, because so many of the challenges that we face, how to harmonize man with the space in which he lives, is influenced by factors that have to do with our culture, our history, our relationship with each other, how we as Caribbean people share that space. And that is going to have to influence the way in which we formalize the living space that we occupy. And there, these challenges are many. Because we have been overtaken by human settlement activities. Instead of guiding things and making things happen, we have ended up as the victim where things happen to us, and we are now playing catch-up. We're going to have to roll so much of that into the evolution, the development of our own peculiar Caribbean architecture. I pointed out yesterday that there are some things that are not reversible, some things that the orthodox architect may consider to be something that is unacceptable and therefore something that has to be rectified. We are in fact going to have to normalize and in fact institutionalize so many of what we see around us, which has resulted from perhaps our inability to plan and to design and to accommodate the human presence that the environment has to provide for. The mushrooming of informal settlements is one notable case, where over a number of years people have just occupied space. In truth and in fact, it's not a recent phenomenon. If you look at our rural communities, if you look at our road network, that was never laid out by engineers. They didn't sit and plan that, well, this is where we're going to put John's Mountain, and this is how we're going to provide access to Porter's Mountain. It is when slaves were freed and they were given some indication that there are some lands way up in the mountains, so see if you can find a place up there. And they made their way up there through different paths, different tracks, which is why Jamaica ends up today having the second highest road density in the world. We never laid out those roads on a basis that would allow for their easy maintenance. And we ended up with communities being perched on hillsides. That's the only place they could go, because the plantation owners were assured that they would continue to own the flatlands. And therefore, we have all these rural communities all over the place, and governments ever since then have been struggling to try to bring amenities, to try to get infrastructure improvement, to try to bring development to these communities. But to do it on a basis that was never planned. And therefore, one of our challenges is, how do we get our hands around all of this, and how do we bring it into conformity with some of the broad rules of planning and land use and architecture? How do we do all of that? But at the same time, recognize that we're going to have to stretch some of those rules in order to accommodate the reality that is ours. And it is going to challenge the thinking of people. I mean, you're going to have to be prepared to lean on fences where fences that appeared to be impervious before. You're going to have to stretch some of the board rules, but still keep it within the confines of acceptable living. I raised yesterday another issue, which I think is important for me to repeat here. We are challenged, for example, in the corporate area. How many people can we reasonably accommodate in the city of Kingston? Some people say we're running out of land. And you know, we have had to spill over now into Portmore. And one of the issues that we have to address is, what is to be the direction of our future development as a city? Is it to try to spread out as far as we can? And as I indicated yesterday, I've instructed the UDC not to allow that to happen to us, but to begin to look at the corridor between Kingston and Spanish Town to determine, do we need to plan that to allow for what would eventually end up as a merger of Kingston and Spanish Town into one huge metropolis? But the question is that the way we should go? Or should we go the route of Singapore, which, recognizing the limited land space that they had, decided that they had to go up. So they intensified the density, but did it in a way that was properly informed, properly guided, and did it in a way that was manageable. And therefore, one of the things I put out, should we increase our density so that some of the luxuries that we have enjoyed? I live in a community, for example, where every householder has a title that says only one house shall be allowed on this 3/4 acre of land. And I know we kind of get around that by going to the courts and getting the courts to lift covenants. But can we plan for the development of the city of Kingston over the next 25, 30, 50 years, retaining this privilege, this luxury, of having one family unit sitting on 3/4 acres of land? Or are we going to have to opt for significantly increasing our densities in order to create some open space between these sites of high density living, creating the open space that will provide the lungs for the corporate area to breathe? And these are not questions that I can resolve because I have no training in architecture. I have no training in planning. I'm just someone who attempts to shape and form policy. But I need the assistance, the input of the professional to say, no, look, these are some decisions that have to be made. They are urgent in the sense that they would form the basis of a rollout of a development, physical development, land use strategy that would guide activities and events that impact on the land over the next 50 years. And it's one of the issues that I really urge you to help us to focus on. Your conference is being anchored by a good institution. I'm not a product of the University of Technology. It was not so esteemed at the time when I was seeking a tertiary education. It became a university since then. But it has made a tremendous impact in Jamaica. It's really broken important new ground. And I think in its current endeavor, in this particular exercise that it is hosting, it is breaking some new ground. I commend it. I urge it to continue to challenge new frontiers and to break new boundaries. And I wish for all of you, as you focus on some of those issues that we grapple with at this time, I wish you success in your deliberations. Please let the people of Jamaica have the benefit of it. Thank you very much.